Hello and welcome to the Blindside edition of the Whiteboard Rugby Podcast. And this week, it is not one but two Robertses, and we are joined by creator of Young Rugby, social media influencer, Will Roberts. Will, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Sam. It's great to talk to you. And you alone, really? No. It's having heard multiple editions of this being recorded, and also hearing it live as well. It's great to try and get my two pence in when I can.
Well, we're very happy to have you because you are not only a young person, but an expert on young rugby and youth rugby. So just before we recorded this, but actually about a week and a half ago in podcast time, we were talking about cap limits and cap rules, and we were looking at kind of young players, perhaps in England, and the influence that foreign players coming to England, especially kind of more experienced foreign players, might have on those young players. So before we get into the dynamics of kind of youth rugby, can you talk to us a little bit about your experiences and what you've seen when it comes to those players coming over?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I started sort of documenting and keeping an eye on age-grade rugby about the age of 14, 15, when I started a social media brand called Young Rugby, which highlighted the sort of next generation of stars, particularly within England and the UK. It did expand a little bit after that. But it is an absolutely incredible circuit to get your teeth stuck into, as there is a complete conveyor belt of stars that are encouraged to play really free flow attacking positive rugby, which is always really exciting to watch. And you almost get that gratification, as in 3-4 years you then see those players pulling on Premiership rugby shirts, and in some cases pulling on England shirts, and that to me gave me a real hook. And ever since then, over the last sort of 4 or 5 years, I've been sort of enveloped in that sort of area, getting to know these players. Some of which, especially over the last couple of years, I've been the same age of, so I've known on sometimes an even deeper level, and been able to see really behind the curtain of how exactly that jump between age grade into professional rugby really occurs, which is very interesting. And to your point, Sam, it's very well documented within football at the moment that the golden eggs are those that you create in your own academy, you want to kind of be creating as much homegrown talent, and it is actually being kind of under our noses been mirrored within rugby union over the last sort of 2 or 3 years, without much sort of fanfare as there has been in the more round shaped ball. So it's certainly a fun time for someone like me that has been geeking out over these sort of players over the last 4 or 5 years, to now see them getting more and more time in the light, as realistically it comes down to figures on a finance sheet for a multitude of clubs at the end of the day.
Hi, Will Roberts. Sam Roberts here. Nice to have you on the show. You talk to us about how different clubs have done it, or you've seen that different clubs have operated. You mentioned football there, and obviously rugby always looks over at football kind of enviously as to how they're doing it. But how, because different rugby clubs have a different approach to bringing in youth and working with youth in a different way. And you know, this season particularly interesting when you look at the size of squad numbers and the size of squads, there's going to be a different reliance on it. Talk to us about how you see certain clubs operating different to others.
Yeah, a lot of clubs have done it very, very differently. and have approached their youth systems with varying degrees of success. I'd say at the moment, the best example of it in the Premiership is Northampton Saints and their ability to be able to drip feed in youngsters into their starting 15 every year for the past sort of since about 2017, 2018. And now they've got a captain in George Furbank who's only been playing, he's been playing senior rugby for since 2017. He's made his Anglo Cup debut only at the age of 20. So he's 27, captaining the Premiership winning side. They've lost Courtney Laws, they've lost Alex Waller, they've lost Lewis Ludlam this year, and yet there is still this buzz and hype around this side because of the leadership that they've been able to take out of players like Fraser Dingwall, Alex Mitchell, Alex Coles. On different levels, you've got even younger boys like Henry Pollock, who will look to come through, Tom Pearson, Tommy Freeman, George Hendy. These players that they've continually drip-fed through their starting 15 over the course of the last sort of, as I said, 7 or 8 years, that has meant that despite losing their big hitters, they've always had someone waiting in the wings. Other clubs seem to take more kind of heavy-handed approaches. I'd say Exeter are probably one in which, obviously, back just pre-COVID, they were very much a side that was littered with a lot of international names, some of which were, of course, homegrown, likes of Alec Hepburn, Henry Slade, Sam Simmons, those sort of boys that they diamond in the rough. But they've since seen their Scottish contingency, Johnny Gray, Stuart Hogg, come and go. And now you look at that Exeter squad, and there are a lot of names of which a lot of even well-respected rugby journalists might find difficult to try and pick out of a lineup, because they seem to have completely gone back to square one. They're utilising Exeter University really well. They've got a lot of players on university contracts, where the deal is that they come and play rugby for the Chiefs, and they will pay for their university and give them a bit of cash on the side, which is a brilliant model, because as we know, a rugby union at the moment is a finite work environment. So you can see there's varying degrees of success. That's just two clubs in the Premiership that have taken it in extremely different ways, and as I say, to varying degrees of success. There is no proven method, I would say, and a lot of it is a case of right time, right place, and the right players. But with the increasing market of academy prospects, now that we've had London Irish Wasps both go under, as well as Yorkshire, who were still a part of the rugby academy bracket at under 18 level, all represented with Worcester as well, obviously, with this Midlands, Central Midlands West, London South Central and Yorkshire Academy taglines. So there's so much talent out there. Different clubs are picking them up in different sorts of ways. And I'd say the proof will be in the pudding in terms of who will be able to capitalise off that best.
A quick question for you, I've got, Will. So you talked about Northampton there and how successful they've had this pipeline of players just coming through, and obviously that last year that bore fruit, but it looks good for the future. Are they a team who are particularly good at identifying talent, or are they a team who are particularly good at putting that talent into situations, into senior games, which means in the future they can benefit?
I think this question probably could be, I could try and gloss up and say that yes, it's a case of talent ID and talent nurturing, but this kind of exposes one of the harsh realities of age grade rugby, which is that Northampton Saints are in extremely good proximity to some of the best fee paying rugby schools in the country. They have Stowe, they have Rugby, they have Oakham, They have Bedford School, all within an hour and a half. They've pushed into Stamford as well. And even
St. Joe's,
as far
they go
as
far as St. Joe's, don't they, as well?
St. Joe's and Norwich, like Jake Garside, a Norwich boy, Lewis Ludlam, obviously came from St. Joe's. They have a bit of a gluttony of that sort of East Midlands independent school area, which has just meant that they have players from the ages of 16, 17 that are basically treated like semi-professional rugby players from the off. There are schools like Stowe that will have these boys on 100% scholarships. I've heard of cases of 110, 120% scholarships where you're literally paid to come and basically play rugby for a school. It's pretty unheard of. They're then basically brought into a semi-professional environment. They're training every day. They're in the gym. They're getting high-class meals three times a day and then going to train at Northampton Saints on the side. So I would say, I'd like to say that it is down to that sort of incredible academy ethos, which in part it is. Mark Copley and his team do an incredible job at Northampton Saints, especially on the personal side and the way that they grow players. I think you can look at the Northampton Saints squad and even every way that they carry themselves, all these academy prospects, you can kind of tell that they're a very good group of players. I would say, and this is probably one of the fundamental issues within age grade and school where rugby itself, is that there are a lot of high quality schools within that area, and it is no secret that Northampton and Leicester get sort of the meat and veg.
Let me add to that as well, because there's a lovely story about Tommy Freeman, who was with Leicester Academy up to the age of 16 before being cut and was ignored by Leicester Tigers and told to go on his merry way, moved schools to Moulton College and was then picked up by Northampton Saints and brought into the fold. And to add to your point about great coaches, you know, Sam Vestey's treatment of Tommy Freeman and the way he understood Tommy Freeman to be able to play the game was absolutely crucial in his development. Tommy Freeman does not need a huge amount of coaching. And I mean that in the best possible way. He actually doesn't work well with lots of information coming into his brain. So Sam Vestey worked on this and spotted this before he really sort of progressed, and was able to sort of say to Tommy on occasions, you don't need to be in this meeting. You don't need to be talking about this. You don't need to be thinking about this. What you need to do is just do this and just do that. And it's that sort of, and I'm sure a lot of coaches, and there's a lot of teams out there who have these coaches who are able to read these young players and work out how best to develop them. Because you can't just stencil the same coaching or the same sort of pastoral care onto everyone. Everyone is different. Everyone needs different things. And it's that skill that really needs to come to the fore with young players to really bring them out and really make them into the players that they can be. And a prime example is the way that Tommy Freeman was treated by Northampton Saints and really nurtured into his role to allow him to go and do stuff. And he spoke to me about even, you know, players like Dan Bigger. Dan Bigger was quickly told and given the idea that Tommy, you don't need to speak to Tommy, you don't need to tell Tommy. And of course, with Dan Bigger, it was really difficult because Dan Bigger loves to shout at everyone. But don't shout at him, because it doesn't work with his brain and the way that he takes information on. Just say it to him once and it'll be fine. A really fascinating insight into the way that everyone is part of bringing these youth players through. It's really good. Will, I want to ask you, I'm going to have to leave pretty soon and you'll be glad to hear that I'm going. But I just want to, we myself and Sam, a few weeks ago, were talking about, you know, the Premiership and the URC signings. You said to me, oh, Bath have probably made the best signing recently. And then you asked me to guess who that was. And I couldn't guess who that was. But you tell me, or you tell our listeners, why you think Bath have made the best signing and who that is.
Well, this is a player that was literally probably top of at least four or five lists in the Premiership in terms of a signature. He'd signed this deal with Bath before he'd finished at school. That's how much of a prospect and prodigy he is. Again, he's come through the Harrow sort of churn of talent, and it's a hooker slash eight. I think he'll play at hooker, called Kepueli Tuipulotu, who's Welsh qualified.
Hooray!
English qualified. he was originally part of London Irish and their academy, and has then since obviously been picked up by Bath. I just absolutely love this signing. He's been completely and utterly destructive at under 18 level for England. He's a big, big lad, a really, really big lad, and will, I imagine, already start to punch some holes across Somerset. It's where he plays will be the real interesting question. They've kind of been trying to hone him as a hooker. It's his throwing can let him down, but. I think that's very much trainable, as we've seen in someone like Craig Wright, for example, Northampton Saints. That is a very easy fix, and once they've got that fixed, I think Bath, with the signings that they've made, especially at a sort of younger level, could be really, really set for the future.
You mentioned there kind of the talent coming through and how Bath were able to identify that talent. We are. At the start, or about to start the NFL season, obviously one of the main events of that is the draft, and where all of this talent, thousands of kids who played at college level, can get selected, and that generally they focus on the best schools. When we're talking about players signing for the club, if I were a fan of a Premiership club and I saw someone coming up into the ranks, what are the schools that I should be looking out for, the ones that where if they're good enough at that school, then they're probably, you know, lots of things can happen, but they probably might be a very talented Premiership prospect.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Harrow is certainly one of them. In this year group that are moving up into adult rugby at the moment, Kepueli Tuipulotu and Charlie Griffin were both part of that Harrow contingency. They both ended up at Bath. Charlie Griffin's this really powerful winger who, again, was part of the London Irish setup. Then actually moved to Saracens to finish his under-18s as part of an incredible backline at Saracens under-18s level. And has since then played for England age grade and is now signed for Bath. So Harrow, certainly one of them. You've got across sort of the West Country, there are sides like Clifton College, Dean Close, potentially a few years ago, not so much anymore. Clifton have certainly created a big few names, the likes of Tom Bowen, who's just signed actually for Cardiff, despite Bristol's best efforts to try and keep him this side of the border. You've then got sides like Sedba, Wellington College, these boarding schools that are in the middle of nowhere. So these boys have nothing better to do than lift weights and throw around rugby balls. I went up to Sedba for Sedba 10s, and it is literally in the middle of nowhere, and everyone is holding a rugby ball. And even from walking from breakfast to their first period, they're chucking rugby balls around valleys and sort of you can see it's like a factory for rugby players. So Sedba, Wellington, and then as I mentioned, the previous schools like Stowe, Rugby, Oakham. No matter how good or bad they do in the overall circuit, they'll continue to churn out players. And then the crown jewel is Millfield, obviously, a school that have pretty much dipped their sort of hand in every single Premiership rugby team. At the moment, England are blessed with a few former Millfield players as well. Again, another great example of almost an academy first before a school that they seem to boast.
So you talked there about players making the transition from say one academy to another, or signing for a professional club from a different academy. My clearly outdated view of this was basically that if you go to the Northampton Academy, you're going to go to Northampton Saints unless you're cut. Is that changing? Mm-hmm. And if so, is that a recent change?
Yeah, absolutely. The demise of Worcester, London Irish, and Worcester, London Irish, and Wasps completely threw a cat amongst the pigeons in terms of the academy scene, because you then had 14 academies if you include Yorkshire, who were an RFU affiliated academy that competed in the under-18s academy, Premiership Academy League. 14 academies to try and fit into 10 Premiership sides, which obviously, as you can tell, that doesn't really go in. If you get, you usually get a crop of 7 or 8 top players each year that could easily find their way into professional deals. And you then had, obviously, therefore, about 20 to 30 players that are more than good enough stuck on the sidelines because they've got nowhere to go. So it meant that players, clubs started looking around, and the first sort of notable movements were last year, where, for example, like Northampton Saints picked up Reuben Logan and Will Glister from what was Wasps into their academy. This year they've been absolutely loads. I'll rattle off a few that I think are really interesting. London Irish have been picked apart. There were so many players a part of that Irish team that were really exciting. Like so Rory Taylor, who's ended up at Gloucester, and Afolabi Fasokbon, who's probably been better known for his under-20s work. They both obviously ended up at Gloucester, part of the London Irish setup. There are a few cases of players that are moving from still established Premiership clubs, academies, to others. Exeter took basically a lot of Saracens players. They took initially Junior Kapoku, who ended up in the Southwest for about 2 or 3 weeks before he was then picked up again by Racing, which is obviously where his brother plays. A very interesting setup with him. He's an absolute freak of nature, Junior Kapoku, if you ever get to see him. Louis Johnson as well is the other one who's made the move from the former Finborough schoolboy, was at Saracens, is now gone down to Exeter, who again just seem to be continuing to try and make diamonds out of any sort of stones they can find. Though Kane James as well has gone from Newcastle to Exeter. A similar part, obviously, Josh Hodge, who was a famous name that have done that. I can imagine that Newcastle might have the same case with Ben Redshaw in the not too distant future, where a team that can offer him a lot more money won't be able to compete. So there are multiple examples of it, but it does come down to a numbers game. There are a lot more academy players right now than there are professional teams, and therefore it's a shame, really, because you still do have a multitude of players that won't get into those professional deals straight away. But the silver lining is it's meaning that Bucks Super Rugby is now so hot. You've got players that are Premiership level that are going to end up going to university and playing first 15 rugby there. And friends of ours, Dave Rogers and Joe Burns, will probably know about them best as they cover Bucks rugby really well. And as we've seen, a lot of those players will then get picked up at the end of their university degree by Premiership clubs who have seen them perform. So it swings and roundabouts, but I'd say it's certainly going to continue to become a trend that academy players move around.
That's a very interesting one about university, because I know that Teddy Leverbello and Charlie Titcomb, I think it was, went from mm-hmm. Cardiff Met to Scarlets. They gone through, I think, their whole university. I think they completed university and then were selected off the back of that. That feels like quite a modern change that's happening. Is that caused by or in your opinion, is that caused by the unsettled nature of rugby, and you really do have to have something behind you to fall back on? Or is it caused by Bucks rugby just getting so much better than becoming a place where actually you can continue to develop rather than a last resort if you haven't yet been picked up?
Certainly. I think it's a combination of both. There were players like Luke Northmore and Alex Donbrandt that kind of paved that way, that proved that you can. I mean, they're obviously both products of Cardiff Met, props to them, because they are sort of a secondary academy machine, and have continued, obviously, to churn out top-class players. But yeah, I mean, I kind of got this first-hand experience of it last year, speaking to players, a part of academy systems that I know, that friends of mine that would have at that point been moving on into university. And it kind of seems a lot more like a no-brainer nowadays, because you can pick up a degree and continue to pretty much the same level of rugby. Loughborough are in the National League, and have a National League team that continue to run out. And as we know, the gap between the National League and the Championship is ever closing. So they're basically getting that sort of experience whilst being able to complete a university degree and get some form of qualification. So it's certainly the trend. Clubs like it as well, because clubs nowadays are not only just looking at the rugby player, but the person. And if they can, for example, not only be a part of their sort of their starting 15, but also maybe even in 5-10 years move on into an administrational role or whatever, or someone that can be an integral cog of the club for years to come. A lot of clubs see that as absolute gold dust. So yeah, there's certainly been an upwards trend of that was paved by those sort of exceptions to the rule that are now the rule. And no doubt we'll see more and more players. There are some players on hybrids where they'll be signed to professional deals, and then these premiership clubs will turn around to them and go, well, do you want to still get your degree? And they will go send them out, not even necessarily to the closest university. They'll send them to the university that they got through on their UCAS. And then they will go and continue their degree, and the premiership club will sort of keep a hold of them. So it's certainly encouraged by clubs, encouraged by players, as they see it as a positive route for their future. And probably if there was a way to make it a more kind of black and white process for young players, I think personally it'd be the right call to make. But some of these players are obviously destined to continue to lace up boots from the age of 18, so it doesn't really matter.
I don't think we can go through the episode without talking about the influence of private schools. So I'll be completely honest, it's not an area I have any expertise in at all, really. And I understand, I probably share people's opinion that it is frustrating to see the majority of kids by and large overlooked. However, I guess a slightly nuanced take is that clubs aren't really doing anything wrong. You know, they have limited time, they have limited people to look at. You would look at the schools that are most likely to give you a more or less finished rugby player. And so while there's undoubtedly talent at the state level, it's going to be harder to unearth. Is that your opinion? Is this a concern for the future of rugby more broadly rather than just youth rugby?
Yeah, it's 100% a concern. But as I know you've in previous episodes talked about the financial constraints that rugby put themselves in. It means that whereas 10, 15 years ago, clubs were allowed to have one or two, let's call them wild cards in their squad, where they pick up players that are, rough around the edge, and that they can afford to have them under contract for 2 or 3 years before they're ready to even take the field for a loan club. never mind a starting 15. Clubs don't have that financial luxury anymore. They have to have players ready to go almost straight away. And as I said before, partnered with that, there are some independent schools that now see this as a prime opportunity to basically become a sub academy, and they can attract players, students. It's a real grey area.
Yeah.
to come in and come to their school, pay money to basically set them up for a professional contract. Whether it is because they have these direct links with schools. I know, for example, there are many academies that have coaches that are part of the academy setup and part of a school setup. So there's some players that will have 24/7 sort of coverage from a singular coach that will then bleed into a junior academy setup, which is obviously massively beneficial as these players start to understand what these coaches want and can better play to that, which gives them better odds of course, receiving that deal. All these schools are now obviously equipped with gyms, pools, recovery. They'll have physios, and even the level of coaching at schoolboy level. It was announced this week Ben Youngs was going to become, I think, director of performance at Gresham's, alongside his obviously continued Premiership career. You've got Roden Winter went from being the director of rugby at Coventry to the director of rugby at St Joe's, which was at that point a really weird switch to go and basically go from towards the upper ends of the championship to a schoolboy team. And there are multiple examples of that. To your point of whether it's a concern, it's a real catch 22, where, as I said, it's rugby have put themselves in this position where they're going to find it extremely difficult to take chances on these on state school players that will certainly have the potential, but not necessarily the facilities or coaching. I'd really like to see a better application of ACE schools and Centre of Excellence schools. There have been some great examples of players like Tommy Freeman coming out of Moulton College, excelling out of that. I think that potentially is a short-term fix, where you have players basically in these rugby colleges that are then able to try and get to close to that sort of that private school, independent school sort of level in terms of coaching and facilities.
Well, I think that's fascinating because it's such an interesting and nuanced area. And you know, as you say, if you turn off that tap, it's not like there's another fully functioning tap that's going to take over. So very fascinating. The last one I want to leave you on though, Will, is put you on the spot. Can you give us three players that we should look out for this year that you know, for maybe the fans who want to look for young talent, but they're probably going to look in the Premiership, maybe in the various European or Anglo-Welsh Cups. Who should we be looking out for, or Plem Rugby Cup even this year? Who should we be looking out for who might be making a senior debut this year?
Oh, it's very difficult to pick. Usually when I start these, I'll then end up naming 20. So stop me if I do start rattling off. I've always been drawn to backs because it's a lot easier to see their full potential. It's very difficult to kind of stick a flag in a front rower at 18, 19. So it's not necessarily it's much easier to visualize these players getting starts soon. So I'd say players that are less well known, Jack Bracken at Saracens. He is obviously a son of Kieran Bracken, a brother of Charlie Bracken, who may be better known, the scrum half. Jack Bracken's a back three player. He's just electric. He's so, so quick and has got an incredible step. I know he's already been a part of the Saracens. I think he went to the Algarve with them out in Portugal. No doubt will he get some minutes in pre-season and potentially in the cup as well. I will pick a forward. I'll pick Finn Carndiff. A lot of people will want me to pick probably Henry Pollock, who's I'd argue the louder version probably of Finn. Finn Carndiff is a future Leicester Tigers captain. There's very little doubt about that. His leadership and aura is very, very impressive for such a young player. Sort of lock slash six, and will continue to do the dirty work for you and usually come up good. And then one more. Gosh, this is tough. I'm going to be cheeky and mention two players that are in very similar positions. Tom Threlfall and James Lineker, who are two young tens at Leicester and Bath, respectively. James Lineker is still at school, but he's signed a professional contract with Bath. I covered him at the under-18s league finals day at the end of this season. I think he kicked about 15 points off the tee. His boot is incredible. And he was nailing penalties. And Matt Banahan was on commentary with me. And at halftime, he did tell me, he went, watch this kid, because he is special. Tom Threlfall, similar. He was at Nottingham High School. I think he's just left and was already put in the Tigers team to play Nottingham last Friday night. Right. Again, they're both quite small. They're not sort of the big brutish tens that a lot of clubs seem to like at the moment. That are basically 12s that can pass and kick really well. These are your classic nippy 10s that have got incredible soft skills and a real, real good game management and awareness, which I think is incredibly hard to find in your teams. The last players that we kind of saw that with is someone like Marcus Smith. Hate to kind of label players as exciting next Marcus Smiths. But I'd say I've cheated and said four, but you're lucky I haven't said more. That's all I'll leave you on.
Well, thank you so much. It was absolutely brilliant to get some insight into this part of the game that perhaps we don't see enough of. So thank you very much for your time today. And people, clip that last couple of minutes and record.
Go impress your friends in the pub. Exactly.
Exactly. Exactly. And just make sure that you remind them of this in 3 or 4 years' time. Thank you so much, Will.
Thanks, Sam. Great. Cheers.